All right, we're back in action. This is number 25 already. Man, how time flies. I had a big gap in between them. I still got to figure out this video situation. I'll explain that more later. But the race season is, of course, heating up and lots of new bike news. Some good, some not so good. But there's a lots to talk about before my first video gets going within the next week. I know I said that last time, but this time I mean it. Let's go.
This is Short Travel Magazine.
Short Travel Magazine.
Interesting tidbits. Curated just for you.
All right. Not many tidbits this time, but a couple things. First of all, I just wanted to see if anybody watches or watched the show American Restoration. I think it was on History Channel, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. It started from the Pawn Stars spinoff, and, you know, it's the guy, I think they're in Las Vegas, and he restores old stuff. It's one of those shows I leave on the TV during my work day and just kind of leave it on in the background. So I've seen them all 100 times, but one I forgot about, and I've only seen it twice now in all these reruns. The Park Tool had an episode where the dude from Park Tool, the main owner guy you see in those videos he releases, the new product videos, I can't remember his name. He took an old vending machine, or had an old vending machine like for candy and cigarettes, and had that guy, Rick Dale, out in Las Vegas, had him refurbish it into a bike tool vending machine, an actual functioning, looks like a candy machine, but it's, you know, it's cool because they're all cycling tools, spoke wrenches and multi-tools and little things that fit in a typical old style vending machine. And it's just cool because, you know, cycling related, and of course, you know, the machine had to be park blue, and it's got the logo, and it looks old and retro, but is fully functioning. I think he mentioned he's going to put it in the lobby or something of Park Tool. I'm also assuming it's not going to be something you would really go in and put money in and actually come home with stuff. I mean, that'd be kind of neat, but I think it's more for decoration. But that was just kind of cool. If you ever are flipping through, or maybe that's on YouTube or something. That was kind of a neat little thing. Also, let's anybody who's watched World Cup racing at all has seen, of course, now I don't know how to say it. Is it Thomas? T-H-O-M-U-S. Tomus being a Euro brand. I'm not quite sure the pronunciation. I call it Thomas Bikes. But of course, you know, Alessandro Keller and there's a huge team of Thomas Racing, Thomas, and I didn't even realize. Now, I know they still have mainly a European market, but there is, and this kind of freaked me out because it kind of went under the radar, they actually have a fully stocked, what would you call it, factory store, I guess, in California, and you could walk right in there and check out all the bikes. It's in Santa Monica, near Malibu. And yeah, fully featured, which I find a little odd, I'll be quite honest with you. I can't say, like, does Canyon have such a shop? I mean, that would be actually make sense for a Canyon, even though they are a direct, consumer direct, you know, company. But if anybody who's been in California or even lives near Santa Monica who has been there, I would love to know if it's as cool as it looks. Now, it's looks like a fully functioning bike shop. I mean, they have obviously all the different models, but from the photos, I can see, you know, actual stuff on the walls as if they were a full functioning bike shop. So that's cool. I was checking out their, I guess this is a Yelp page, and there's a bunch of photos that people have posted. Just one of those things. Now, they're insanely expensive anyway, So it's not like I'm going to walk in there and walk out with a bike, but just the same, it's kind of cool to see some of these Euro-based brands kind of coming over here. For example, they don't all do it like Thomas does. There's a report I did. I'm going to post it. One of my first videos is a Chicago area bike dealer show. It was back in February, I believe, early February. And Bulls, it's a bike brand, I believe from Germany. Bulls, which used to sell bikes, I think they sold in America at one point, maybe in the 90s. But they're always at the Cape Epic, and that's what made me think of it. The e-bikes that are ridden by the dudes following the racers with the cameras on their helmet, they always have Bulls e-bikes. And there's an actual couple teams, the Bulls teams, that are always at the Cape Epic. So they have a huge, you know, they have a big cross-country presence outside of America. And I did talk to the guys at Bulls. They had a booth at the Chicago Area Bicycle Dealers. They're only pushing their e-bikes in the U.S. And they're really, really nice-looking e-bike. I mean, they're really heavy-duty looking. They do not look like cheap pieces of crap like some of the e-bikes do. These look like real mountain bikes, full-on capable of heavy-duty use. So I ended up with some Bulls socks, and I think I got a Bulls backpack and stickers. It was just kind of cool to see. I don't know why I get excited about these European brands in America. It's just something different. I get so tired of seeing the same brands over and over. The Santa Cruz, Trek, Specialized, Canada, and that's pretty much all you see around my parts. So would I buy a Thomas and ride him? If I could afford it and I had multiple bikes, you know, if I had a desire to keep a stable, sure, I would buy one. They look kind of neat. So anyway, I just thought that was cool that they actually have a store in the United States. It'd be kind of cool to have one kind of in the Midwest and then one on the East Coast. That would always be cool because, you know, let's think about, us people here that can't get to the West Coast as often. I would love to just check them out. What else? The other thing I found interesting, of course, now this is a couple weeks old. News, you know, death of the bike industry. All these people post these videos on there on YouTube. Is Trek finished? You know, Specialized, the end of the road. And, you know, these dramatic, stupid headings. They don't have any more insight than I do or you or anybody else. They just like to talk about stuff like I'm doing right here. But the one specifically of Trek cutting SKUs 40% next year. And that to me was like, finally. I mean, this, I don't understand. I do understand. I mean, I understand the motivation to have 10 million different models of a bike, for example. But if you've ever been to a typical bike shop, you're not going to find 1/30th of as many models and colors as you could actually get. There's just no way. So like if you go right now, I was looking at Super Calibers. They came out with a Gen 2 for 24, which, you know, improves a little bit on Gen 1, which I almost bought. But Gen 2 seems about right. That might be something I might buy down the road. And, you know, there's the 9.5, 9.6, 9.7, 9.8, 9.9. Then there's the XT versus the SRAM GX. Then there's the XTR model. And then there's and then they add a few colors. And next thing you know, one bike is end up with, you know, 72 SKUs for basically the two or three levels of bike. So I totally get why a big company like Trek would do it. And I think they should. I think there's just too many options. And normally I wouldn't say too many options is a bad thing. But when you can't get half of them are out of stock because they didn't make enough of them, and the color you want, you know, isn't in your size, and then the components are microscopically different. I don't know. It just seems like it would not hurt the whole industry to kind of focus a little more. I don't know. We'll see. Like a good example is shoe companies like CD Shoes. I used to always I always found CD shoes to be, you know, for me, they were one of the best. They felt the best. They looked great. But if you look at them now, it's almost like Apple Computer keeping 17 different iPhone models in 6 different colors with 9 different hard, you know, storage, RAM. It's just insane. You know, so I go look at CD shoes. They're all about the same. There might be 7 models of a cross-country shoe in different colors. One has one boa, one has two, one has a piece of Velcro here, one moves it over here. It's overdone, I think. So I think Trek cutting SKUs could be a good thing. I'm assuming other companies are going to do the same. It's not the end of Trek. I mean, instantly everybody was saying they're going to be bought out. They're not going down the toilet. They've been around for a zillion years. I think they'll be just fine, but cutting everything back a little bit, I can see no harm in that at this point. What else? That's it. I'm going to talk about some other gear stuff. There's some cool new products and things that I've found I think you may be interested in. Here we go.
Changing gears. More new stuff we don't really need.
All right, let's start with something electric, something. Okay, that was stupid. Trying to make a funny joke. Charging batteries. Now, all you diehard anti-battery people could probably skip this section, but this is what it's come to. SRAM and Trek both have charging stations that have hit the market. And the Trek one, Charge Time, it's called. CHRG time again with the vowels missing. Hopefully that'll die a quick death. It's been done kind of to death. It's a nice little box. It's like a little white cigar box size thing. And you not only charge, the point is you put your own chargers in there. It's basically just an organizer, if you will. The sample they use is showing a Wahoo computer in the main compartment, the cable that runs through a hole underneath, and then you have like a Wahoo watch or a Polar watch, and then you have bike lights. There's 3 other compartments. I mean, it's nothing but a nice kind of organized system. You know, and underneath the tray where you put your devices, there's an actual power supply. Actually, what it reminds me of, any of you guitar players out there, it looks just like a pedal board for guitar players, where underneath the top platform where your pedals are, there's a power brick, and then there's slots where you plug cables in for the AC power, and then you run them up through a hole. It's exactly the same thing. That's probably where they got the idea from. And it looks like it can power 5 or 6, it's got 5 or 6 cable slots. They look like USB slots, short little cables, and you just plug this one box in. It's got a lid on it. It's got a catchy little saying: ride bikes, have fun, feel good. That's kind of their thing. Anyway, it's $125, and I could see that being useful. Now, of course, you have to have your own, like the SRAM Axis batteries have to have their own charger, so which are, you know, $40-$50 a piece. So you still have to have, in certain cases, an actual charger. But lights, computers, things of the like, where you just plug a USB-C cable in or a USB type A mini or whatever they call it, all that stuff. It's a nice thing to have on your workbench, I could see. $125 though, eek. But the SRAM 4 battery Axis system actually makes more sense. Now, the funny thing is, they picked 4, but would that work? I have a SRAM Axis, the original system, on my Top Fuel that I bought early, mid last year. You know, it was kind of a late to the party on the wireless shifting. I wasn't sure if I'd like it, but I actually love it. And have no intention, at least on that bike, of going back. I kept the cable shifter on my fat bike, but honestly, I'll probably switch that over this year. since I have an extra cassette or two in chain. But anyway, I only have the one battery, so I bought a backup charger and a battery. I have three or four batteries and then two chargers. And I basically bought an extra charger, paid full $50, so I could throw one in my case, like in my race bag, just in case I needed it. But this, you know, you think of the new, the newer, as in 2024, 2025, SRAM bikes with the flight attendant. There's one between that, the dropper post, and the ridge, whatever. There are four Axis batteries, exactly four, that you would need to charge. That's on top of, this is kind of staggering if you think about it. How many things, I was thinking of this on my last ride, how many things on a bike, a top SRAM flight attendant level full suspension bike with a dropper and a modern computer, a Garmin or something, how many actual batteries will you have to keep charged to go on a nice long ride? You got your four, your rear derailleur, seat post, rear shock, front shock. There's four. Then you got your power meter, which you have to get the most out of the flight attendant, you really need a power meter. So now you have to charge your spider-based Quark power meter. That's five. Of course, you have two coin cell batteries in the shifter controllers. So now you're up to seven. Throw on your Garmin, there's eight. And then I thought, you know what? Your phone. Everybody brings their phone with them. So now you're talking nine. And for the real diehards, the real crazies, they have a heart rate monitor on for training and for racing. So now you're talking a 10th battery. Think of that. 10 batteries on your body and bike for a mountain bike race or a long ride. Now, of course, you don't have to have a heart rate monitor, but just saying, that's the maximum I could come up with. 10. 9 would be normal. 9, you're going to bring your phone. You got to have that charged. Let's say you leave your phone. You're still dealing with 8 on the bike. Let's get rid of the Garmin. You got 7 on the bike batteries. Granted, your two controller shifters are changed only. I'm still on my originals. They're not even halfway done. It's been almost a year or so. Maybe you can say, okay, those don't count, but you're still talking five batteries before you head out the door to just keep track. So $120 for this SRAM charger seems like a lot. That's basically, they're 40-ish a piece. Couldn't you give people a deal and maybe make it, you know, $90 or $80 or something? It's a charger. I mean, I get it. There's electronics in it, but I don't know. That seems excessive to me for what it truly is doing. So there you go. Not only do you have to buy all the batteries, and of course you should have extras of everything. Now, in SRAM's and Axis Systems' defense, if any one of those batteries, except the rear derailleur, failed, it would be no big deal. You don't need the flight attendant. You don't need the dropper seat posts working. So you could, in fact, get away with one decent battery to get home. But just the same, I know all you people who hate electronics on the bike are going to say that's stupid and I don't want to deal with all that. But honestly, it's been a non-issue for me. So there you go. What else? Let's talk some specialized things. I found it very interesting because when the SRAM transmission, the new version of the Axis system came out, of course, you had to have a UDH rear derailleur mount, which only bikes from the last few years, and not even all of them, even current, there's a few current models that don't even come with the UDH. But that basically meant if you didn't have a frame from the last 2 years, you were out of luck. But 5DEV, as I call them, I don't know, 5DEV, they make some, they kind of remind me of the old 90s company where they just machine stuff out of aluminum, crazy looking cranks and I don't know what else they make. I forget, chain rings and stuff. They've somehow hacked a UDH adapter for certain specialized frames. Not having any specialized frames doesn't concern me, but I would be kind of interested if they could do this to other bikes, and I have not checked in the last month if they have expanded it. I'm guessing there's not going to be a huge market for that, but you never know. I mean, if you've got a really nice carbon frame from 4 years ago, and you go, you know, I really want transmission, yeah, I'll pay, you know, $100 or $80 or whatever it is for one of these adapters. Kind of makes sense. I don't know why they chose the frames they did. I'm maybe thinking just due to the way they're built that certain ones will not allow it. It'd be kind of nice if SRAM actually worked with other frame companies to kind of develop something. I know they want to sell new frames. I get it. No way they're going to do that. So if you got a specialized frame and you want to do the new transmission, check out 5Dev. Maybe they make an adapter. That's pretty cool. I brought up Flight Attendant. I'm assuming you guys know what that is. Anybody who follows this stuff does. And, of course, they've been teasing it for darn near a year. And it is extremely intriguing to me to lose all the lockout cables and still maintain some control over how your suspension is working. I personally, the way I ride, where 90% of my summer riding is on bike paths and pavement, I would love that. I mean, I keep my bike locked out almost the entire ride for hours at a time when I'm not on an actual mountain bike trail. And when I am on a mountain bike trail, I almost never lock the thing out. I did lock it out at Iceman Cometh last year because there were some pretty long uphills that were very smooth, and it was actually kind of cool. But I always have the fear, and I've done it before, is that I forget to unlock it, and I go flying down a hill, and I'm getting bounced all over, and then I got to freak out and remember to unlock it. So I personally, I would love Flight Attendant. If I had, you know, money was no object, I wouldn't even think twice. I would buy a bike with Flight Attendant on it right now, which means you get a power meter, which I've always wanted to dabble with. I almost bought one last year. Excuse the phone ringing in the background. I actually have a day job that I'm ignoring right now. So yeah, I would buy that in a minute. But man, it's, you know, you're looking at $14,000 is kind of the typical Flight Attendant pre-built bike entry point. So that's not going to happen anytime soon. What else? Speaking of Specialized and Flight Attendant, the new Epics, of course, were released, Epic 8. I got to be honest with you. If I had to pick a bike right now that meets all the criteria of everything I've ever wanted, the Epic 8 is the front runner by far. Not the S-Works Flight Attendant, you know, but the Expert. I think it's $7,000, which is still ridiculous. But you believe it or not, the thing that catches my eye the most, of course, two bottles for me is mandatory. My next bike absolutely will have the ability to hold two water bottles cleanly. That's the only thing I hate about my current Trek is the one bottle. I got to strap a bottle below the top tube, which means I can't reach it at all. It's just for extra water. But in the old days, I'd have two bottles. I'd fill one up with some, you know, Gatorade type stuff diluted, and then one with water. And it was awesome to be able to kind of have a choice of both. I really miss that. So my next frame, if I buy a frame or a whole bike, there's no question. Two bottles is a must. The other thing is that little storage compartment under the water bottle and the down tube. That to me is like a dream come true. I still run a little seat pack. It's very small. I got the smallest Rode seat pack I could find. And I shoved in there way more than you would think. I got a Tubo Lito inner tube. I got two CO2 cartridges. I got a mini tool. I got tire patches. I got an extra SRAM Axis battery. I've got tire levers. Extra chain links. I got some cash in there. Some zip ties. I mean, I shoved this in the mold. It's so crammed, but it is in there. And to think that I could put a lot of that stuff hidden out of the way in the down tube, to me, is so enticing that I don't think I could buy a bike without it. Now, the only other cross-country-ish bike that I found that has that. I think the Cannondales have it, but I'm not buying a Cannondale. And the Canyon, but the Lux Trail, not the Lux World Cup cross-country bike. They looked like they changed the frames now. They used to be the frames were the same. They just threw longer fork and shock. But the new Lux Trail looks, the top tube looks lower. It looks completely different. And that does have in the bike storage. It's a little different than the Specialized. So kudos to Specialized, Epic 8 Expert or Pro. I don't know. If I just go crazy and buy a new bike, I might actually grab one of those. My cousin works at a Specialized dealer here in Northern Illinois, and I would probably just drive up there and order it and buy it from him. So you never know what could happen. My goal was not to buy a new bike this year, but I don't know if I can hold out. I really want 2 water bottles. What else? Other interesting thing I noticed, minor, but a lot of the new 24 cross-country race bikes, not the trail versions, but the actual cross-country race bikes are being spec'd with 180 front rotors. It's always been kind of 160 front and rear. That's kind of been the standard for cross-country. But now they're throwing 180s on the front. I have a 180 on the front for my fat bike, which came standard. And I actually like it. Is it a huge difference? I don't really notice that big of a difference, if at all. But the idea that you get a little more kind of power up front, a little more cooling capability, all that stuff, for nothing more than a little bigger rotor and an adapter, a little metal adapter to space out the caliper 20 millimeters. I don't know. I think that's kind of a smart move. I know we were seeing some 4-pot brakes coming, 2-pot actually, front and rear 4. 2-pot brakes coming out the last couple years, more on cross-country, but I don't think that's a bad thing. The weight penalty is very minimal, and the only downside is you can't swap rotors front to rear. Not that I do that, but it's nice to kind of have a stash of 160 mil rotors that I keep. I can just kind of throw on once in a while. So that's kind of interesting. Things are definitely changing. And I was going to talk about the Ari bikes, the Fazari changing to Ari. That's now several weeks old, and I'm over it. It was kind of interesting watching their little announcement, the video. And they had a lot of new bikes to show with the new graphics. And, of course, us poor cross-country guys, their cross-country bike is still, as I checked a couple days ago, has not been updated or shown. They just kind of have placeholders, blurry photos where a normal bike would be. So who knows if they're going to take their Signal Peak, that's their full suspension cross-country bike, if they're going to change it or just paint it with new stickers. Kind of hoping they tweak it a little bit. So there you go. I'm not going to go into that because it's old news and I don't think people are clamoring for yet more discussion on why a company would change their name. They had legitimate reasons, I suppose. So one last thing. I checked the Canadian Mountain Bicycling website. They have their own kind of magazine, Canadian Cycling Magazine. They just posted a thing today, I believe, on how all cross-country race bikes are looking the same. They're basically have adopted the same formula. Shock on the top tube, flex stays instead of pivots, 2 water bottle mounts, yada, yada, yada. And, of course, all you got to do is look at the new Yeti that came out. ASR, it looks exactly like every other modern within the last few years race bike. And I have to agree with them. You know, you got your Tomas bikes, a Giant, a couple other European brands, Mondraker and a couple other that have kept the format that My Top Fuel has where you have the shock down by the bottom bracket, which of course eliminates in many cases the 2 water bottles. Pivot also, they've kept that. Pivot has added some water bottle mounts under the top tube. I have no idea if that actually holds a bottle safely there. But anyway, so I'd have to agree with them. It is starting to all look the same. But if you've lived through the 90s where full suspension bikes were absolutely crazy, some of them. But you know what I thought? it's interesting for all you old timers. The original version of the, what was the bike with the scissor link fork? Why am I drawing a blank? Lawhill, that guy designed this thing. What was that called? I can't remember the name. I'm getting old. But we've gone full circle. There was one prominent bike back then that looked exactly the same. There was several of them. A lot of companies would bolt the rear end, the same rear end, on their front triangles. But I had the top tube. It was a little simplified version of what we have now. But we've kind of come full circle and settled on the same exact basic design that we had 30 years ago. So there you go. Go figure. Let's do some quick racing stuff, and then we'll wrap it up.
Racing news and views.
Racing is happening now because it is April, and that means World Cup racing starts. But it also means there is some North American action. In fact, this weekend, I believe Friday, we are starting. Now, if you're into watching racing, most people just watch the World Cups and maybe an occasional Swiss Cup or something out there, of course, the Cape Epic. But the U.S., in my opinion, has been a bit of a mess in regards to elite-level World Cup racing. I mean, cross-country racing, not really World Cup. So here's the problem I see. USA Cycling, of course, runs most of the big pro race series in North America, in the U.S. They have their own series called the, appropriately enough, the Cross Country Mountain Bike National Series. There you go. I call it the Norba, okay? That's what it should be called. I don't care. Pay off whoever owns the rights to Norba and call it that and be done with it. They've got a series. It's in California, Tennessee, Arkansas, Louisiana, Utah, Wisconsin, Virginia, and Montana. Excellent kind of spread it out north, south, east, middle, and west. Okay? It's awesome. The first one already happened March 23rd in California. And the next one, kind of weird thing, that was on the 23rd of March. The very next day, March 24th, was the one in Tennessee. So I highly doubt anybody flew across the country. I'm assuming they were meant to be kind of concurrent. I can't imagine many. I didn't look at the results yet. And then the next one is this weekend in Arkansas. But there's a U.S. Pro Cup, okay, that's only in California. There's only two races, only in California and Arkansas. Now, this one I don't get. I'll be completely honest. Why is there another U.S. Pro Cup with only two races when they have the cross-country series? I'm assuming if one's in Fayetteville, where is the U.S.? Yeah, they're the same race. So I'm not quite sure. Talk about confusing. I don't know what's going on there. The U.S. Pro Cup, you know, where amateurs and Olympians come to race. Then you've got the USA Cycling Series, which is the same thing. And the fact that they share the same, is that Temecula, California, the same? So is it just, no, it was Vail Lake. So the U.S. Pro Cup in March had the California and Vail Lake results. Assuming that's different than the one that is the same. I don't know, man, is it? See how confusing it gets? Why are they, it was the same weekend. The Vail Lake, is that Temecula? I don't know my California very well. Is that the same race? That's part of USA's own series. So you got two races as a series. Then you got seven races, but they share the same. I don't get it. But anyway, that's happening this weekend in Arkansas. And there are a lot of big hitters, American big hitters, are going to be there, men and women. So I don't know if they're going to stream it at all. I'm not sure, but I find that very strange. I think we need to get our act together and make one series. If it's this cross-country series, call it something catchy. They had some dumb names, Pro XCT, blah, blah. telling you, call it the Norba series and try and get some Euros over here like in the old days when they used to come and do the Norbas. That would be cool. So the only chance I have of going to one would be the one in Wisconsin in the middle of May. I might actually go to that one. My season, I'm going to start racing the first Wars, which is Wisconsin Off-Road Series. Trek puts that on the 5th. So 2 weeks later, I guess it'd be 2 weeks. Yeah. 2 weeks later, they're going to have another race in Wisconsin part. It's also part of this USA Cycling National Series. That'd be a good chance to see a few of the big wigs in May. I don't know where that falls with the World Cup Series. Let me look. You know, the schedule for the World Cup. Cross country would be May 24. So that's gonna be a tough one. Well, if you're gonna race in America and then what, immediately get on a plane and fly over for the Nove Mesto rate World Cup the week after. So I'm guessing the Wisconsin race is not gonna be full of Gwendolyn Gibsons and Sevilla Blunks and those and the you know, Riley Amos type. I'm assuming they're gonna stay or be in Europe. I still might go to it anyway, just to kind of see all the hullabaloo. Speaking of hullabaloo, I'm going to try something different this year. Not that anybody cares, but usually these Wisconsin races, again, I'm in Illinois. I'm about 2 to 3 hours south of all of my races. So they start in the 11 o'clock hour usually. So I'm usually leaving my house. A good 7 a.m. would be the latest I usually head out the door. Got a 3 hour drive, and then I got, you know, an hour, hour and a half to check in and make sure I'm registered, get my plate, get back to the car, change my clothes, try and get a quick 20 minute ride around the parking lot, head over to, you know, I don't have a lot of time there. And I just see no reason to spend the night, you know, nearby when it's just a 2.5 typical hour drive. So I got a notice that the schedule is out. Of course, May 5th is the first one. It happens to be my favorite place to race and ride. It's the Trek Factory Trail System. They've had two races there now in the last 2 years. It's the trails they test their bikes out on. The private trails, there's no other really way to ride these trails during the year unless you work for Trek. So they open them up and have a huge race. I mean, there's 1,000 plus people racing, and the trails are fantastic. They're not too tough, they're not too easy. Some hills, some downhill. It's just my favorite place probably that I've ever ridden or raced at. So it's early this year, which means I'm not going to be in very good shape. I haven't even really started riding much, and it's already April 3rd, but I'm going to try and cram the next month. And it said if you volunteer, you get in free racing. I thought, I'm a little cheap. You know, races now are $40 to $50. I thought, what if I checked into that? I emailed the race director, and he said, yep. If you do some volunteering the day of, you get a coupon for a free race. So, and you get a free lunch, I believe. Maybe even get a t-shirt. I think I saw everybody wearing matching t-shirts. So they had some openings like 8 to 10, for example. My race would start at 11:30. The dude was so cool. His name was Marcus, I believe. Was so nice and said, you know, whatever you need. If you need to cut out a little early to get ready, worked so cool with that. And I'm like, man, this is first class. So I'm going to give it a try now. I'm going to have to leave at 5 o'clock in the morning. Most likely, but, you know, I don't sleep the night before a race anyway. I'm laying there knowing I got to get up way earlier than I usually do. I am not a morning person, I'll tell you that. My typical work day doesn't start till 9 or 10 in the morning. But, hey, I'll give it a try. I'm going to sign up. I'm going to register to do some volunteering. There's all kind, you know, a lot of the stuff where you work with the young kids, like Finish Line, help the kids. And I thought, that sounds like fun. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to try it at least at this first race. See how it goes. What the heck? I'm going to be super tired and I suck anyway. So if I'm a little bit slower because I got up 2 hours early, so what? So be it. I'm going to give it a shot. So that's my goal this year, is to try a couple new things like that. Of course, Cape Epic is over. Oh man, that was a pretty good one. Of course, it got boring the minute you knew Specialized and Cannondale. Not Cannondale. Yeah, it was, well, no. Who won the stupid thing? Ghost. Duh. Ann Terpster. Ghost and her partner. I mean, that was the first time they've ever raced it, and it looked like the old days of Specialized, when they used to just, you know, when Annika Langvad would partner up with, name the person, didn't matter, and they would just win every single day, and it kind of got very boring. So in that regard, the women's race was very boring. The men's race had some action going, you know, but it was kind of cool. I just wasn't quite sure of one thing. It's a little late now. Why did not Nino and his partner, why didn't they have to wear the same jerseys like everybody else? A couple times at least they would say how, unless you were a national champion or a world champion, where you could wear your country's or whatever, you know, their special jerseys, you had to wear the same jersey as your teammate. And Nino was the only one that I could see, and I looked hard. Him and his teammate did not have this. They had two completely different trade jerseys, and that was it. Nobody could tell me why. I even reached out to good old Bart Brenchins and said, "Hey Bart, why are they allowed to, just because he's Nino and he can do whatever he wants?" And he did not have a good answer for that. I was kind of hoping he would reply back and do a little digging, but he was obviously very busy over there. So there you go. So the Cape Epic's come and gone. Is that going to pay off for anybody this year? I don't know. I kind of liked that Christopher Blevins did not do it this year, even though he kicked butt at it. I'm hoping he can kind of bounce back this year and have a great, great, great kind of reemergence, if you will. And I have high hopes for Kate Courtney. I think she may have a kind of a bounce back year. She's still fast, still training, and she won a big gravel race out in California with relative ease. So you never know. She may be secretly kind of behind the scenes kicking butt. And it's going to be an interesting season. Now, of course, the excitement is a few weeks away. We're talking 11 days from today. The first race in Brazil is going to happen. One thing I do need to mention, anybody that likes short track racing, I personally love to watch short track racing. They were going to dabble, I think, just in Brazil, maybe, if I remember. They were going to do where you just have a short track on Saturday and then the full cross country on Sunday. No more Friday, take a day off. And they've announced today, in fact, I believe, that they are going to do that for all of the cross-country races where there is not a downhill on the same weekend. There's only, let's see, three weekends of the 8 or 9 races where they also have a downhill. If they are sharing that weekend with a downhill, then they will keep the typical Friday short track, Sunday cross country. But everywhere else, they're doing it Saturday and Sunday. I think that's kind of cool, actually. I'm sure they would love a break in between, but I kind of like to see what happens. If somebody really busts their butt on Saturday, what's going to happen just one day away? Personally, I don't think it's going to matter a whole lot. These are trained professionals, you know. Blowing it out for 20 minutes the day before, I don't think is a huge deal. But you never know. So that's interesting. I find that They moved the under 23 short track to Friday in all cases. So they'll still have a Friday race. So keep that in mind. The thing I still have to figure out is how and if I'm going to sign up for one of these max services so I can actually watch these stupid things. I still am mad about GCN Plus shutting down. I think that was just dumb. They're trying to consolidate. That's the whole thing we were trying to get away from when all this online streaming crap started. No more cable where everything's combined into one. Now you get to piece it all together and you only buy what you want. Well, where are we going? We're right back to where we started. Now I got to buy Hulu if I want Disney, or I'm going to have to buy Max. I don't want Max and all the crap that comes with it. I just want the bike races. GCN Plus was perfect. 50, 60 bucks a year. I'd have paid 100 bucks a year. I don't care. Go to a website or whatever, an app. There they all are. Watch the old ones. Watch the new ones. Done. Maybe in the next couple years when Discovery loses money for the fifth year in a row or something, somebody else will take it over and we'll get back to some sanity. So we all know how to watch these races without paying 200 bucks, 300 bucks a year for the privilege. All right, that's it. I'm done. Keep an eye out. I'm going to try and get my videos up. I got great stuff already to post. I just have to get my act together and figure out how to best present it in a video form. So that's it for now. Talk soon. Go riding a few extra miles for me. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you ever so much for listening to Short Travel Magazine.